You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. National studies show that police have very little training to deal with one of the problems that they encounter a lot, people who have unaddressed mental health problems that sometimes reach a crisis state. And joining us now, we have Deputy Chief Dave Campbell with the Juneau Police Department, who's here to tell us about some of the virtual training that officers are now undergoing. But I suppose, Dave, that people probably want to know, what is virtual training? How does it work?
Sure. Hi, Rhonda. Thanks for having me. It's relatively new to us, but just to backtrack a little bit, at JPD, we give our officers a lot of training. We give each officer a minimum of 80 hours of training per year. I believe that the Alaska's Police Standards Council dictates it's somewhere in the around 40 hours an officer should get. So we give our officers quite a bit. We've been doing that for almost as long as I've been here, which is over 25 years. So what we do is we have two, what's referred to as 40-hour training blocks. We've been doing that for a while, where we provide officers with 40 hours of training in, for lack of a better term, late winter, early spring. And then we do it again 6 months later in late fall or early winter. And we have a variety of topics that we cover during those training blocks. Some are mandated through statutes, we are required to have some sort of form of domestic violence training annually. Some are through things like bloodborne pathogens you have to have annually. And then there's some policy issues that are required as well. But that leaves you a little bit of wiggle room to have other things as well. And one thing that the JPD has really striven for over the past about 6 years is to really focus on mental health and giving our officers the tools they need to respond to people who are in mental crisis. So we've talked about it before. We have a long history of providing training. But what we're doing now is pretty inventive. It's pretty new. We got through a grant a virtual reality simulator. I don't know if that's the technical term or not, but that's what we gave them. And it's a pretty slick piece of equipment. We were pitched the idea last summer. That's when a lot of the issues around the country with people being upset about social injustice was going on. And it was a pretty slick idea. And what we were presented with was combining the virtual reality simulator with the training that goes along with de-escalation through our CIT instructors. So
CIT stands for what?
Yeah, so CIT stands for Critical Incident Training. And we really jumped into the CIT with both feet back in 2015 when then Chief Bryce Johnson was our chief. Chief Johnson came from Salt Lake City, and Salt Lake City was one of the lead agencies in the nation that brought in CIT training. So he brought that with him when he came to us in 2015. And we ended up sending two of our officers off to become instructors to teach CIT. And those officers are Detective Patrick Taylor and Sergeant Sterling Salisbury. So they are our two in-house instructors. They receive training every single year. They go to Congress every single year. They've really stayed up to speed on it. And they have trained all of our officers in CIT principles, which basically give officers tools. So when they're dealing with somebody in mental crisis, how they can handle them in the most compassionate way possible, so that we don't just jump to the conclusion that everything's a crime, you know. You learn a lot about mental health and diagnoses and active listening skills and how to talk to people and how to de-escalate things. So we've been doing this for probably about 5-6 years now. It's been very, very successful. But last summer, de-escalation really became kind of the forefront for the nation. And we were doing that as part of CIT. So Sergeant Salisbury came to us with an idea of getting a virtual reality simulator and then using it to help role play the tools that the officers learn, the CIT tools, so they can put them into practice.
So can you give us an example of like what a potential scenario might be role played
sure.
out for the officer?
Sure. So the tool that they got is this simulator, which is pretty cool. It kind of think of the holodeck on the Starship Enterprise. It's not quite that cool, but The participants wear virtual reality goggles that cover their face. So anywhere they look and they see, they are immersed in this world. They put on headphones so they hear what's going on. They wear a backpack that has like a computer. And then they need a large open room. And then on the four corners of the room are these posts that detect where they are within the room. And then the participants are projected into a virtual world, and the instructors can put the participants in pretty much almost any situation you can think of. I've seen schools, shopping malls, bowling alleys, back alleys, residences, pretty much you name it, it's there. So you're kind of fully immersed in your senses, both visually and through hearing, in this world. And as you move around, your avatar, your digital representation in this world moves around as well. And then you end up encountering things. And you can encounter, there are hundreds and hundreds of different character profiles that are put on the computer. And then the officer in this virtual world would interact with the person. And the person they're interacting with is actually one of our CIT instructors, who is either Patrick Taylor or Sterling Salisbury. And then they role play, and the officers then get a chance to use their skills that they've learned in the lecture portion of the class on de-escalation, so they can practice what it's like in a controlled, safe environment that's really realistic.
You know, a lot of times when an officer is brought to the scene where someone is experiencing a mental health crisis, usually their family has been at the end of the rope, and the crisis is building. And so it's very difficult for officers to come into those highly tense, highly challenging scenarios. Can you give us an example of how this might help an officer, maybe, you know, for instance, of what the officer might be called to deal with?
Sure. Well, I can just talk to you from my own personal experience. So I've been with JPD for 26 years, and I was a hostage negotiator training. I was part of the CNT for 10 years. I was sent to CIT training back in, I believe it was 2004. So in 2004, when this was kind of kicking up, you know, well before JPD got involved with it, Anchorage brought in some CIT training, and myself and Officer Jim Quino went up there and received the training. And it was really beneficial because you learned a lot about what it meant for people to have mental illnesses, how they process things. Oftentimes, people with mental illness have dual diagnoses where they also have a substance abuse issue. That's very, very common. And what I came away with in 2004 was a lot of empathy and compassion for what people were going through. And it helped me. I was a sergeant for 10 years. So of my career, I spent a lot of time as a frontline supervisor. And it just gave me a better understanding. So if I went and I was talking to somebody and trying to figure out what was going on to help, you know, give them some services and some help, it wasn't just a strict, oh, it's a domestic, you know, we're going to go to you know, take a person in custody or doing something like that, because that doesn't really solve the issue. One of the things that we did in 2004 that was really beneficial was we had this this exercise we did where we put on headphones, and it simulated what it was like to have auditory hallucinations. And then you walked through, and they told you ahead of time, hey, if you are prone to having seizures or something, don't do this. And so I said, hey, I'll put on the headphones. And so I spent an hour listening to voices as well as trying to interact with just my classmates. And it was really difficult. And I remember coming away with that thinking to myself, wow, if this was someone's reality where, you know, 24/7 they were hearing voices, just how horrible that would be. And then there's a few times in my career where I was talking to people and I kind of got the sense like they weren't quite with me. And I was able to ask them, are you hearing other voices? Are you doing things? And it gave me like the empathy to better relate to what was going on. And so I think it made me a better officer. And I think the CIT training that we have makes our officers better officers. Because you get right down to it, it's a really small town. We all live here. We all interact with each other, and we don't just want to, you know, lock people up. That's not the solution. If a person has some sort of underlying condition, whether it's mental health or substance abuse, you know, the first step is let's get them help so they can come back and be productive members of our society. Because it's a great town, and I think that's something that really separates Juneau from a lot of other places, in that all the cops that work here live here, and for most places in the country, that's not the case. In most cases, officers work in one country, or a percentage of officers work and live in different communities. And I think that really changes the relationship and the narrative, because in Juneau, I interact with people, whether it's at Costco or softball games or church or places like that. And it just makes a difference. So I think it aids that quite a bit to have that understanding when you're talking to people.
It seems like police officers, like teachers, are increasingly asked to do more and more and more things. And part of it is due to some of society's increasing dysfunction. So I suppose that you can't possibly train somebody completely for all the different scenarios that they're going to encounter with mental health issues. So how does this generally prepare them?
Again, it gives them the experience in a safe environment, so that if they're in the field and they encounter it, they have a frame of reference. I was a field training officer for several years before I got promoted, and we engaged in what we called if-then thinking, because oftentimes police officers are reactionary. You go someplace, something happens, you have to respond to it. And the more experience you have, the better, because you have a frame of reference to where, how you can respond to these things. If you don't have any kind of frame of reference and you're trying to think it up on the fly, that can be dangerous, because it can cause hesitation. So we would engage in this if-then thinking of, okay, I'd have my recruiter be like, okay, we're going to this call. What do you think is going to happen? What are you going to do if this happens? What are you going to do if this happens? And at least if you've thought it through ahead of time, then you can react quicker if one of those eventualities happens. And that's one of the benefits of role playing and of working through these scenarios. And that's where I think this virtual reality simulator is so cool, because it's very immersive and it's completely safe. And we have our trained CIT instructors that are working through this with our staff to help give them more of those experiences.
So what kind of feedback are you getting from your officers who are plunged into this virtual world?
Well, what we're doing is we also signed up with a group called an online training organization called Police One. They're nationwide. And unfortunately, we're putting 25% of our workforce, our officers at a time, goes through this. So we have four 40-hour blocks to get our staff through. So, when we're fully staffed, we have 57 police officers. If you take out the admin and the people that don't work the streets, then you're closer down to 50 plus. We have vacancy factors, so we got anywhere from 10 to 12 people in each class. But we don't have the ability for 10 to 12 people to all be in the simulator at the same time. So 1 to 2 people can be in the simulator, and the other people are doing online training through Police One, because it's kind of a go at your own pace kind of thing. And the feedback I'm getting is people really, really like the simulator, and they wish they could do it more, but it is somewhat limited, just because we're trying to get 10 to 12 people at a time. The beautiful thing, though, is now that we own this equipment, which we did get through a grant, and we have our two in-house instructors, our CNT instructors that know how to run it, we'll be able to use it until it breaks. I mean, as long as we need. So right now we're kind of throwing people in the deep end of the pool really, really quickly. I think we'll start using it a lot more. But the feedback I get is that they really like it. I haven't done it yet. Chief Mercer did it last week, and he liked it. I'm probably going to try it next week during the next 40-hour block that comes over, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm a little bit nervous that the instructors might give me, the Kobayashi Maru, the Star Trek Impossible Mission to try to solve. But I guess that's the nature of being an administrator and having to go through these things.
I'm always amazed at how our lives are more and more like Star Trek as the years go by. Just a quick question while we're on the subject of mental health. Many people have wondered, if COVID and all the stress associated with it has triggered more mental health problems in the community and crime.
I don't think we quite know the extent of how the mental health piece is. I know for crime, we just completed our initial review of our 2020 crime stats, And then we're in the process of doing our quality control check. So I'm not at a place where I can give you exact numbers on our 2020 crime stats, but it looks like across the board, the numbers have declined from 2019, which is a good sign. And that kind of makes sense to me, because when you look at our crime stats, we report through what's referred to as Uniform Crime Reporting with the FBI, UCR, which has been around a long time. The state in this year is making the change to NIBRS, which is going to be a big move for many departments, including ourselves. But UCR has eight Part 1 crimes, which are the higher-level felony crimes. And what really drives those crimes are the property crimes, which are typically theft and burglaries. And it makes sense that that those would go down, because, you know, most residential burglaries happen when people are at work and the house is empty. Well, if people aren't at work and they're at the house, that really limits the opportunity for a burglar to go burglarize a residence. So when I saw that they were down, I wasn't surprised. Across the board, I think 7 out of 8 of the Part 1 crimes were down, which was really, really encouraging. We'll know within a couple of weeks what the exact numbers are, and then we'll start putting together an annual report. And the chief, I don't want to steal his thunder. I mean, the chief likes to go out there and say, hey, here's what the numbers are. So I know what they are, but they're not 100% finalized. So I really can't say, other than they've gone down at that point in time. And then the mental health issue is going to be interesting. We're looking at our stats. The city has started having a few meetings. We had a couple last week, a couple the week before. So I pulled some stats on what the mental health, what calls had a mental health component. And again, it's very, very preliminary numbers, but it was really high. I was actually kind of surprised at how much, how many mental health component crimes that we had. And I think that, again, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I think the city, JPD, JAMI, the General Alliance for Mentally Ill, and a few other groups are getting together to try to address this holistically from the entire city. So it's not just one agency dealing with these things. So I'm pretty excited that this topic has come up, and that a wide breadth of people are looking at it, so that we can really try to make some inroads and get people who need help the help they need.
All right. Well, thanks very much. And I imagine what you would have been a Commander Riker in another world, huh?
Well, I'm tall enough. I'm tall like he is. I was allowed to grow a beard last November for a cancer charity thing that we did. And if they were allowed, I would be rocking a beard right now. So I will take that as a great compliment that you are calling me a Commander Riker.
Well, I guess next month we'll get to talk to Picard, right? and get the stats.
The chief, yeah, that's right. You'll get him. I don't know. He's more of a Captain Kirk to me. He's a little bit more a little more hair, at least.
So. All right. Well, you're a very good number one. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Ron, it was a pleasure. And I believe you were from Anchorage, are you originally?
Well, I've lived in Anchorage for the last, or I lived there for the last 30 years. So I've been there for quite a while.
I moved to Juneau from Anchorage. And when I saw your name, I was like, I'm pretty sure Ron is from Anchorage and I recognize her. I don't think we've ever talked before, but it was an extreme pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for having me on. And I'm sure we'll talk more in the future.
Yeah, who knows? We might have met as I was covering one of those mental health incidents in the streets of Anchorage. So
possibly.
In the dark of the night. All right. Thanks so much for joining us.